Well, good morning. Good morning.
Can you see what that's like?
Sit on over there, will you?
She's got some pictures.
I want to show you some pictures.
Yeah.
This is some of Charlotte. You might not be interested, but I thought they just came out
good.
That's a death mark made for her, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And he covered that chair for her.
Oh, really?
And Jake Listen copied this still life for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in her kitchen. Then Miss Mizell did this picture for her. That's her family room. Had another one of the family. No, these two of the family room. This one in, this is one in.
Mm-hmm.
This
a pretty house.
Oh, that's beautiful.
This is her dining room part of that's sitting over there. That's her guest. And then that's Arwen Charlotte playing the piano. They played chopsticks. Oh, he just loves the piano. I think that's extra good of them. And that's them again. And that's Pretty's girlfriend and her little girl.
Uh-huh.
And then this is another part of the movement. And then this is the grandchildren. They spent the night with us the other night.
Yeah.
That's good of the baby.
Yeah.
And that's Ruth Richardson's son. And these are the pictures up on the hill where Max and Alice have their lot. See the Lake Warburg? See that?
Uh-huh.
And that's the front of the lot. But didn't it show up good? Yeah. And I took that late one afternoon.
Yeah,
real good.
Mm-hmm.
Let me turn this off. I just had it on, just testing it.
Yeah, you know, after you it's like going to a place. You read about it like I read something about Alaska. Mm-hmm. What was the novel about Alaska? Oh, I don't know what it was. Well, I enjoyed it much more after I came back than when I went. You know, if you know something, then you enjoy it after you...
You kind of got to see the place, know the place they're talking about.
Yes, you read about it.
Yeah.
But then when you go, then you really can come back and say your piece of cake's out there on that seat in the car.
Okay.
It's been the late
I never saw anything like this.
It started... Oh, in 1961, and then in 1964, and it began by a man named Ben Johnson. And I read that last night because I didn't get that from the mission. You know, you don't pay too much attention to it when they're really planning something like that. As I said, you don't understand it. And we hesitated a good bit about inviting people to come because we didn't know what it was. But we didn't want to have a revival.
You didn't want a revival.
People are scared of revivals.
Now, these days.
Yeah, frankly, they are afraid of revivals.
They used to look forward to them.
Our preacher, little preacher, bless his heart, he's just as sincere as he can be. But he had tried to make us have prayer meeting over there every 3 months. And he went on. He didn't know how to go about it.
No.
Well, that was Walter. They voted. We tried. Well, of course, after voted, Walter was chairman of the board, so he felt like he had to go. And he and Nancy went. And Cora, Ms. Johnson, I sometimes. But you can't count on older people and sick people. And there was three or four of us, you know, over there.
Yeah.
But Miss Johnson doesn't feel like going to church lots of times. And Iris doesn't. She goes at night, and then she goes to church, but not Sunday school, and we miss it Sunday school.
Oh, yes.
And then there would be some very consecrated souls that would take all the time to discuss who they were going to pray for. And then everybody would come and they'd pray so long for the same thing. So we never did have any study, you see what I'm talking about. So I tell you, I just reneged after the first month. I've always
That could
been,
be hard on you, couldn't it?
I've always been faithful to the church, but when it came to that, we had a prayer meeting one time. Back years ago, And it got where Ruth Richardson and Elmire Yates and I were the only one, and we had a preacher. And he had false teeth. And he'd rattle these false teeth, you know.
You could hardly live above some of those things.
We had friends and whatnot. He got rattling those teeth, and I tell you, we got tickled and we giggled. That was long years for Rupert, man. We giggled, and I had to play the piano. He said, "Would you try to play the piano?" I said, "Yes, I'll try if you'll try to sing." So then we got tickled, Ruth and Elmire couldn't sing. We giggled. But then after it was over, he had prayer meeting, and one of us sit up on one seat, and one on another seat, and one getting back, so we wouldn't look at it. We were all grown. My father, we were married. I was married. So then at the prayer meeting, we thought, well, we'd go home. But then he proceeded to teach the Sunday school lesson then for the next Sunday. We were there the full hour. And when we left, well, he prayed for all those who came. And he said the laughing didn't bother him because he had taught school.
Yeah.
You know, he was used to children laughing. So we sat, he left, and the three of us sat out on the seat. Until I tell you, we out on the front steps, we laughed till we were about sick. And we never had any more prayer meetings until David came. He wanted us to have prayer meeting. He was really sincere in us having prayer meeting. But I told him, I said, David, really, unless you have a study of the Bible and you stick to it, I said, I feel like coming by myself, I said, Mark isn't coming to prayer meeting. I said, I don't like to come by myself unless you have a really, truly program of study. I feel like my time is better spent writing to Mother Richardson or to some other shut-in than coming up there and not getting a thing out of it. Mm-hmm. I said, I know you don't get anything out of it unless you put something in it.
That Yates, is that her brother or father that used to work for Miss Anna? Managed the place over there, her husband,
yeah,
after Mr.
That,
Wood died.
I guess that was who it was, Melton Yates. And Melton was a good soul, but he had a habit that many people have of drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a hard time rearing her two boys, but she reared them in the church, and she's one of our most wonderful Bible students. She comes to Sunday school every third Sunday morning. She and Claire and Miss Collins, I think they said, taught Elmire how to sew. And she had her living a good bit sewing when she was here to put the boys in through school. And both boys have done extra well. One's an artist, I think. I don't know whether he does commercial artwork or what.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other boy's in Gainesville. He's done real well. And then she and Melton finally up and went to Gainesville.
Yeah.
And he worked there in one of the
garages. Yeah.
The husband for a number of years.
Yeah.
And she went to business school.
Fred said he used to go up there and he'd ask about how everybody was out
I know, and have a temper. But he never would come back to the Thanksgiving dinner. He never felt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess he just didn't feel a pardon. Mm-hmm. He was never a social character. I mean, he didn't socialize too much, but he was a nice person, and he was just a little shy. And they bought a home on the Fairbanks.
Mr. Gilbert doesn't come to those.
No, well, they have quite a bit
family,
of family, you know. Somewhere, Rob and Ali sometimes don't come because that's the same group.
Yeah.
So I told Billy the other day, I said, now, I mean, I want you all to start planning to be with us Thanksgiving, Billy Wood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Billy, and I know Diva. You never did know Diva, did you?
No.
Fine-looking boy, one of the finest. But
yeah.
He married this girl in Baltimore, so he doesn't. But that's too bad when they get so far off. And
you know so many of the generations. You have... I bet you a lot of cases like Ms. Yates, what's her first name?
Elmire
Yates, where the woman's pretty well raises her family above the husband. So sort of Elizabeth.
Yes, uh-huh, and she's a nice person. Now, I doubt if her home life, her own rearing, but she's, Miss Collins was very similar to that. Miss Collins overcame a good bit during her lifetime.
I didn't know that.
I think she was a nice person, and they were from nice families. But
yeah.
I mean, and then Lucille went to, one of the girls went to Miss Tebow's school. Have you ever heard, read anything about Miss Tebow's school in Gainesboro?
Yes.
And they must, she must have had one of the teachers there that, I think, some children that went there were reared, were taught that they were a little bit better than some of the rest of them. It comes down in each family, some of them.
They don't have to tell them that. You just sort of pick it up. You know?
But so many people do not have the opportunities of being educated in the graces, the line.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not as graceful as some, but... You can get this, and that's one thing I tried to instill in children in when I taught in junior high school. I always felt like if I couldn't reach them, if I couldn't change them, help them to get a better hold on life, in the ninth grade, I lost my opportunity.
Yeah.
Because in high school, they get too blasé.
Yeah.
They know it all.
Yeah.
That's true.
And penetrate.
And I remember a boy I had, though. He was in the 10th grade by the time I left Gainesville High School. And the last month we taught there, we taught for half price, and that was on subscription.
Oh, really?
We had to raise some money. And we were knocked off the 9th month. And the 8th month, I got $45 or $50 for teaching.
Yeah.
Mark said I was getting pretty hungry by then, so that was why I decided to marry. We had known each other for 10 years, you see, but... Anyway, this boy said to me, and I never have a comeback. I never know what to say when someone says something to me. I just go home and think about it. But this boy said, "Goody, tomorrow we are coming to school and paying to come. We can do just as we please." And I said, "Well, son, remember, tomorrow is a private school. And we don't have to take any undesirable pupils." That's the only time I used it, that it was put into my mouth.
It was perfect.
And so after he went to war, he and Whitey McMullen were in prison for a long, long time in the German camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to this all-day boy, I said, "Well, I hope you had pleasant thoughts of me while you were in that camp all that time." But he liked, good looking. He liked to hold the girl's hand, you know, and smoke sometimes, you know. So that was against the rules at school. So he would get reported for that. So he.
My boy, you could tell them anything you wanted to, and they wouldn't hold it against you.
Well, that's what I said. I don't know.
They just go off and brag about it. That's what she told me.
It's kind of like this Dr. Bellamy, who was featured in the Times Union just Sunday, I believe, and he's in his 83rd or 86th year. He was my major professor in social sciences in University of Tallahassee, FSWC then. But, he came down to Gainesville one time, and I never could make good grades under Dr. Bellman. I was majoring on him, but he just was such a hard grader, and I wasn't a very good student, so we just had an awful time, but I got out. And later he was in Gainesville, saw him on the street one day, and I said, "I have something to tell you." He said, "What is that?" And I said, "I've just been tried for teaching evolution." And he said, "Congratulations, old girl. I didn't know you'd ever get that far." But the thing about it was the fact that they were having a superintendent's race. And this boy that just gave me fits was in one of my ninth grade classes. And his father was working for this opponent of the man that was in the office. And so... I guess I had said, "Well, stop acting like a monkey or something like that, you know. And, well, anyway, this poor father who was almost blind had taken me and was picking on me for teaching evolution theory. And so the superintendent, we had a meeting one morning. I was called into the office, and here the superintendent and the father were there, and Mr. Buholtz, and I knew a little bit ahead, and I was a little bit nervous, you know. And then they called the boy in there, and he said, "Daddy, I never told you anything that Miss Young said like that." You see, and there we were. But I was
flowing.
That's true. That's the truth.
I know. This is exactly the way.
You have to be careful what you say and what you do, or anything like that. But those are some.
I never knew Dr. Buholtz till he was retired.
You're talking about the father, the son.
The
old doctor Buholtz at the university.
Yeah. Oh, at the public school there.
Now, his father was at the university for years.
I didn't know that.
Yes, well, now, Prof he might have been. I don't know if he was a PhD.
Now, Prof is the one we know.
Yes,
the
Prof.
The one who just died.
Oh, he died, But see, I graduated under him, and then I came back and taught under him. And, I just love Prof. But, you know, I've had friends that, one friend said, I said, "Did you send any money when they were trying to get up money for Prof, you know, to pay into his retirement and everything?" "Oh, I wasn't sending any money into that old goat fund." I said, "Why, John, I just couldn't imagine anyone ever being on the Prof and feeling that way about him."
Yeah.
Because he was of the old school. He was German. But I tell you, you could go from Gainesville High School. Well, if I hadn't graduated from Gainesville High School, I never would have gotten in Tallahassee. I never would have even passed. Much less. But if you finish English under the two White sisters, Ruth and Marjorie White, you can generally get into most any college. But you don't have that in too many of the schools today, and never will again. I'm afraid.
No.
The
not
tempo
like
of the schools has changed.
And you have a feeling for your teachers. You know, all of us do. This age doesn't.
And They were disciplinarians in the fact that most children think of discipline as punishment, but they would guide you and direct you. That was their type of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And Prof was hard on them. He didn't tolerate, and you didn't have any trouble with discipline in your classroom, because one day some of them were misbehaving, and Prof was right at the door. I could see him. I knew he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in there and hollered at one of those boys. "Why didn't you let me know Prof was at the door?" I said, "Well, you never know where he is. You just got to behave yourself."
Isn't that
about the Lord? You know, we never know where the Lord is when we are being naughty.
That's right.
And we're naughty in our minds.
Yeah. And we need a little of the police state like that, don't we?
We do.
Somebody has gone.
And that's what the lay witness mission brought home more than anything else.
Is that right?
And
well, kind of, how does it do?
Well, we discussed this. We didn't want to have a revival.
Well, so let me ask you one question. Where did you get the idea in the first place? Well, you
from David.
Yeah.
But you see, the thing about it, David has been hard to convince that we work together if we are putting on a revival to have it in Micanopy. And let us all join in. And last year, 2 years ago, when Carmack was here, we had two nights a week. And the little minister spoke here two nights, and we entertained him in our home. And then he stayed at the parsonage, he and his wife. Then the other two nights, he preached at Shiloh, and two nights, he preached at Micanopy. And then the year before that, I think, we were responsible for two nights, each church was, over in Micanopy. And I carried flowers for two or three nights.
Mm-hmm.
And we just took part. But we couldn't get that across to David. He wanted it over in Micanopy and Shiloh and Innocent.
Three separate revivals.
But well, we don't have the group here to draw on. That's really true.
You know, on something like that, I think you'd need it's more of a group thing. It helps you if you have a good size.
Well, that's what I said. But
with.
David said, well, you can draw from Macintosh. You can draw. I said, David, there are not that many people here.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard.
And Macintosh doesn't draw.
No, they have their own church.
They've got their own
churches, yeah.
We had one visitor from Macintosh, Fowler Witness Mission that Sunday morning. But you can't blame them if you keep up with the activities of your own church. But David, they
you
had.
Are you satisfied with that little point?
Yeah. David had a revival over in Micanopy.
And that was the reason that was where you got the idea.
No. Yeah. We said to David, we don't want a revival. We want something different if we can't have it with Micanopy. And he said, I'd like for you all to try a lay witness program. We said, what is that? And he said, well, witnesses, people, teams coming out and spending the weekend. He didn't tell us some of the days that they could come, but they can have it one night, or they can have it every night a week. But the weekend suited us. So we said, well, we'd think about it, and for him to get some material on it. Well, that he never did give us a chance to back out after that. We had the record about it, and then the coordinator was appointed. So we decided back there that if we had it, we would ask Micanopy and Shiloh to join in with us, and we would sponsor it, see?
Mm-hmm.
And so he got these little books, A Road to Renewal, and then other material on it, and we said we want to have it in April. That was 2 or 3 months ago, you see, the third weekend in April. And the year it came, we're frightened we got
right.
Especially old Cora, you know, Cora. She just didn't know about that witness mission. And Kay's our lay leader in our church. And Kay and the minister worked together and appointed the committees. And these people are dedicated lay witnesses who are regular workmen, and they come on a weekend at their own expense, and they do not, you don't get up an offering to give them or anything like that. We send in an offering to the Methodist Church for literature and to promote it, but the lay witness mission is, it consists of different churches. It's not just Methodist or Baptist or Presbyterian, but other churches. But as we progress along this, and Cora had the chairmanship of the caucus on Saturday mm-hmm. morning, and Mark had the housing,
I am interested.
Well, what I did was
talked about these things, and I have never talked with anybody that knows them.
Yeah.
Who's actually done it?
Uh-huh.
I can just get right in the middle of it.
Well, we got enthused when we realized what a Christian man Mr. Lively was from Bradenton, who came up and preached to us one night.
Yeah.
And he didn't set up, he just told us. And he came back and was a guest in our home, he and his son. And then there were 13 coming.
Now, that is back well before April.
Well, about March.
Well, you
first
still
March,
had it.
But I said, how many come? He said, about 10. I looked at him like I thought he was crazy. And he said, you think that's too many? I said, well, I don't know. But anyway, they came on Friday afternoon.
Now, who is he?
Lively, a construction man from Bradenton. He and his son are in the construction
Bradenton
business, and they gave their time, and he's a head man. And there were 13 registered to come. And to the different communities.
Yeah.
And Friday night, we had, that was our first meeting, and we had a covered dish supper at Micanopy. And then we were trying to get everybody settled into the Giffen home. So we decided we would wait and see how it worked out. We would see these people. Now, that's a part of the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a couple that wasn't due to come until Saturday, and we had placed them in the home in Micanopy. And when we got there and we began meeting and speaking to everybody, we decided this couple would come to ours in France. And she was a converted Jewess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
And then we all ate, and after the supper, they had one or two or three of these people to speak and tell us. When you have that many, you have to divide them over a long period of time, you see, and to speak and share. I wish the mission were lay sharing mission instead of lay witness mission, because the witness, and somebody come up to you and witness, you're going to get kind of scared of them. But if you and I can share some of our experiences, we do it much easier, you see. So,
in our words, do scare people.
Yes, they do, and I'm sure
it may
some
be the
of
same
those,
thing. But
yes, but if you have something to share with someone, you feel like it's between you and me, and witness, you just witnesses, and I'm witnessing this morning, see, because I want to share it with you. See, that's the thing about it. But then we have discussion group. What is the greatest need in your church today?
Mm-hmm.
We divide it into groups by tables and lay witness missions to different ones. And it so happened that they asked different ones of us to take notes. And at one table, I was a note taker. Another table, Mark was. Another table, Kay was. Another table, Rob Wood was. And, you know, it was thrilling to hear Rob Wood's report.
Oh, really?
And it just meant so much to him. And then we were here discussing in the group, what is the greatest need of our church in our lives today? And then they brought the results back. And then you just kind of get acquainted that night. And then for our coffees, there were only six people, I believe it, Gloria's coffee the next morning. But we had a quiet time. That's what they stressed, a quiet time, and let the Lord be there and
give him a chance.
Let him speak to us. So then they brought up discussion of some of the questions that were bothering us. And we brought up the preacher. It is true. We've had difficulties getting across to him and him to us. For 2 years, we really had, you know, some of the problems that I know you've met. He's very consecrated, but
I give up, and you all kept going.
Well, it's our church. You never would move your membership like I wanted you to, so I can't say, well, now you come on down, that goes out. But anyway, and we had special prayer about it. And there wasn't a soul there that didn't have problems just like we had from time to time. And we admitted that we were at fault, as much as they, perhaps, that it was us and not altogether the preacher, you see. And then the little woman there, and we shared some other experiences. And she was there because of her belief and faith and dedicated life that she had had since she lost her 2-year-old son. And then it was 13 years before she had another child, and she had brain damage at birth. And the problems that she had to overcome, she came all the way from Marianna. And then we were so thankful that Gloria would have the coffee, because that was her only contact with the mission. They went to the lake, you see. And with a small child, they can't always attend. So she also shared their gratefulness for their child after a wait of 10 or 12 years. And then Evanston had a psych lunch for them in the park, and the WSCS ladies. And we had such a good time. And in the afternoon, some of the women from Micanopy who were staying over there came and with Alice upstairs, and they had a visiting good time. And that night, Kay and Mark and I entertained 14 of 13 of them for state supper. Some of them had family in Gainesville and other places to
now,
go.
Now, this back in March?
No, I'm talking about the weekend they were here.
This is it.
And then did you have discussions that night?
Not too much for supper. We just had a good time. And then we went to Shiloh Saturday night, because not many Shiloh people were with us Friday night. And we had a wonderful discussion out there after several got up and shared. And one of the women who shared that night, I want to tell you, just to bring out, was a this Miss Mary Britton from Ocala. And I had heard of Mary, and I felt like I knew her. And so when she came up to our house Friday, she didn't stay with us. She said, "Oh, I know you all. You're Charlotte's parents." And I believe she was at Lake Weir with us once. And she had become an alcoholic, and her principal finally had to fire at South Ocala, where Charlotte, where she and Charlotte had talked together. But Charlotte wasn't there when she became an alcoholic. And she went to the AAs, and she was converted. And it just meant, and this was her first mission. They had had one in Ocala just recently, and at Druid Hills, where she belonged. And she had dedicated her life. And just a different person. She said, "One night I went to bed, I didn't have any friends. The next morning I had a friend." And she said, "I've never been without a friend since, you know." And what a dedicated life she has lived. And she's attending the university and taking some graduate work, and is teaching reading out at, course in reading out at Junior College in Gainesville. And also working part-time at Trinity Methodist up there in the office. Just, I don't know whether she has to work, but she's devoted. And then Aileen Canny from Quincy. And she's one of the oldest families in Quincy. And you could just see their faces. They're just wonderful. And she told about her disobedience to the Lord. And I think so often we are disobedient, and that we do things, and he's telling us, "That's not you, Flora. You aren't supposed to do something like that."
Yeah.
And she said after her first husband died, she decided to marry twice more through the years, and she was disobedient to God, and she didn't ask him anything about getting married. She just married, and it went on, both marriages went on the rocks. And she had other problems too, but that was her disobedience to the Lord. Another man told, and this gets down to you and Mark and everybody else at work things, he said he was a transmission. He was a dedicated Christian. And one night, but taking things in our own hands sometime and temporarily forgetting about God, he was doing transmission, and something flew off that transmission. And it was something he couldn't replace very easily, and it was so small he couldn't see it very well. And said he just was frantic, got frustrated, and just went all to pieces. And he finally said, "Well, I just was leaving God out." And he said he stopped long enough to pray and said, "God, if it possible, will you direct me to the place where that thing flew?" And said, I was told just as plain as anything, it was in a box up on that shelf.
Okay. Wow, Flora.
Yeah.
Now, you can't question it.
Yeah.
You might want to, but when he felt like his prayer was answered, that was right there on top of some things in that box.
Yeah.
You just can't question those things. And then our Presbyterian couple from Gainesville, and he testified that night, and he had become addicted to cigarettes, like most people to liquor. And he told, and all these people were just dedicated. They just lived their religion. But the most valuable memory we thought, one of the most, they said, "All right, if you were to leave out one of them, who would you leave out?" Well, it's like having children. You might not plan to have a dozen, but if you have a dozen, you wouldn't want to eliminate any of them, see?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like having 13, two others came, and 15 with us that weekend, some staying in Gainesville. You didn't know who you'd eliminate, but Martha stayed with us, and she was from Tampa, and she was the cutest thing. She just went anyone over, and she hadn't been a Christian but about a year and a half, and she just laughed and gone. She and Mark were, she was from Texas, and she even wrote us a thank you and put it Evanston, Texas. It came back to us, so she said, "Mark, you see, I was thinking about Texas when I was up there." But Martha was so dedicated, and she said, "Homebrew? Oh, I've grown homebrew all my life because my daddy made it in the kitchen." She was from a terrible home life, I guess, in the background, but she and her husband were both dedicated workers and had a family of five, and she had taken this teenage girl to help the one that didn't have a home. And she really had more influence on some of our young people. She had the discussion at Shiloh, and I know Ms. Lightner, Judy May, was there, and Judy May was worried because no one would take her job as treasurer and secretary of the Sunday school. And she felt like she'd had it long enough. And I believe a discussion and Martha leading it would help Julia May and all of us. And I said, well, perhaps I don't want the one I have, but Mother isn't here. And I feel like that I have time, and it doesn't worry me if no one else is taking. I'm just not going to let it worry me. And that was their idea. If you are living the right kind of religion, then you can't worry about, if I won't, if you do all you can to get me to accept Christ, then you just have to live your own, and maybe sometime you'll reach me, you see. And this woman brought out in this discussion, this Ms. Bristol from Gainesville. Do you know them? They are art. They have an art studio.
I don't know. Not at all. Mr.
and Ms. Bristol, I didn't know them either, but they were there. And she brought out that she was up in old Michigan or someplace at a retreat once, and they brought out these two poems. They said, "You cannot love God any more than you love the neighbor or the person you dislike."
Well,
that's a pretty good point, you know. Gives you something to think about.
Yeah.
And we'll say, well, we love God, but it's like a friend of mine. And she fell out with the doctor for not calling on her after her husband died in a larger town not too far away. And my sister said to her, well, was he at church today? And she said, yes, he was ushering. And she said, well, did you speak to him? She said, no, I didn't speak to him. And it was Episcopal Church, and they had communion. She said, well, did you take communion? And this woman said, yes, I took it. My sister said to her, well, I don't know how you took it.
That's right.
You know, that's it. And then she also brought out that to be truly Christian, we have to learn to say yes, God, because God is love. And if we don't say, and he's our master, and if we don't give all of ourselves to God and let him direct our lives, I don't believe I'd be sitting at this table this morning if I said I was going to marry the man that I was engaged to for 7 years. Because he knew that he wasn't the one for me. And he never had gone to church but twice, and that was with me that I know of. But he said, I respect, I'm sure there's a Lord, because you think you live that kind of life. And he's a friend of mine today, but I haven't seen him for 50 years. Well, not quite that long. Maybe, no, not 50, not 40 years. But I know today he knows that I did the right thing when, and after it worked out, then I let the Lord guide me. Now, I wasn't disobedient that time because, and that's one of the times I wasn't disobedient because I wouldn't have gotten the Christian man that I got and the father to my children if I had been disobedient, because I never got in a hurry and it all worked out. And I fully believe in things working out for those who do trust and love God. And
now, who was that you're talking about just then? The woman from
Tampa. And Ms. Bristol was the one that brought this out.
Yes,
she
Ms.
Bristol. Had gotten out of this retreat,
yeah,
that we have,
yeah,
to learn, because God is our master.
Yeah.
And if we go against him.
Well, now, all those people you mentioned, those three or four people you mentioned, they were listening to.
Yes, they, and that's true.
And
these other people were dedicated, but they perhaps didn't reach. And Kay and Lynn invited Martha, this person from Tampa. She was 39, the one that stayed with us. And they invited her to go to their Sunday school class in McIntosh and talk to their class. And they have a young teacher in their class named Dave Sabin, S-A-B-I-N. And he teaches school in Gainesville. And he's a very fine person. He has a wife and two children. And now they live in McIntosh. And he came up to see our pictures one night, one of the pictures David showed, and John Wesley's picture. And so she went down and talked to him on Sunday morning. Kay and Lynn picked her up. And then...
How did the... over here
at Shiloh.
Shiloh, they could have a meeting of their own. They have such nice people.
Well, they had had their revival, but we went out, and so many came that night that wouldn't have had a taste of what the lay witness mission was. And you see, there were different ones that spoke before the discussion groups, and then after the discussion groups, we came home. But some of them were still discussing at 9:30 or 10. Mark was ready to come home, but they were, Aline Cannon had the high school students. And they were just going strong when some of the older people were ready to go. I wasn't ready to go, but Mark was, maybe Judy. And then... Then we had the morning service here, and Joe Lively spoke. He was the coordinator, and he spoke on the rooms in our lives.
The rooms in our lives.
In our lives. And Judy and Joe had brought all three children to Sunday school, their first time there as a family to Sunday school, and several of the lay witnesses spoke there, but not the most effective ones. That was one of my criticisms. Some of them said, we've heard it preached, that the preacher didn't prepare a sermon. He waited to see what the Lord put in his mouth. And some said he didn't put too much in his mouth on Sunday. Not our preacher, but that was another church. But some of these people were new, and they really hadn't thought through. Now, Martha would say she didn't know what she was going to say when she got up, and she didn't know what she said when she sat down. But that's all right for Martha to say that, but some of the rest of them were not as effective, because they would retrace themselves and they would go for words that they couldn't find, you know, and they needed more experience. One boy spoke, the Lively boy, young man who came with his father. He's in business with him, but he was a little excited and nervous, so he wasn't as effective as some of the rest of them, but still he had an experience, you see.
This would be an art as well as an experience.
Mrs. Wester, little woman who spoke about her afflicted daughter, she was very calm and she spoke very softly, and she knew it was so real to her, and she expressed it. And you can sit and listen, and those people mean so much. But as in every type of organization, you're going to get different type people.
Sure.
And the converted Jewess was very affected. And she told about her father disowning her mm-hmm. when she became a Christian. And he never recognized her children and didn't recognize them for 17 years. Mm-hmm. And she said one summer, just like an answer to prayer, he invited us to come home to New York State or someplace like that. And we cared the children. And she said, oh, we had such a happy time. And said, the next year I went to his funeral, but said how different it was to go to his funeral when we had had such a happy time the year before, you know. But then I went for Sunday school. I had decorated. I had done all of that Saturday and Sunday morning before Sunday school. And Max and Alice, I wanted them to come down. She was going to play Bible service, and I kept the church, so I went home for church. Mm-hmm. But they told me, and Mark said there were only about 25 vacant seats in our church that morning.
Oh, really?
From the three churches that came out. We were sorry that it wasn't convenient for Walker Hootie, any of their members, to come to any of the services, but that's true of any meeting you have, that it doesn't, mm-hmm. not a good time for everyone. But they came with Martha and Lynn and Kay, and when they gave the altar call, Dave and Lynn and went up with Martha, and many more went up. But I said, if it didn't mean any more to anyone, and Dave said to Lynn and Kay later, he said, I'll have to apologize to my Sunday school class next Sunday, because he said, I've told them I was a Christian, but he said, I never have been a true Christian until I walked down to the altar this morning. So I said, if it didn't mean anything to anyone but those two, mm-hmm. it really meant it was worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And I think it was something that our minister was just a different person Sunday night. He said he was just really full of himself, and he saw mm-hmm. what we meant by all of us working together. He said that was just a revelation. I said we worked together before.
Yeah.
You know, but he just
They don't realize that the people out here are so much ahead of them. They can really learn more from out here.
Well, when you want to learn, you can learn. I've always felt like he thought we were opposing him, you know, rather than mm-hmm. knowing what our people would like. But everyone said some of the people said, well, we didn't have an idea what a mission was. Let's have another one.
Oh,
yeah.
You see, right away, well, that wouldn't be effective right away.
Yeah.
Maybe uh-huh. another year.
Yes.
And have a different coordinator and different people, you see. And maybe, and as we said, and not have perhaps as many people, because you can have it effective without having too many, uh-huh. you know. But these people who came, and one thing we really slipped up on was not giving them all dinner Sunday. I gave my four dinner before they left, and others had commitments and games on places, but there were three of the women I really regretted not doing something for. But when you're out like this, you don't have the eating places
mm-hmm.
on Sunday
mm-hmm.
that you have some other places. And some people can't go to church or Sunday school and entertain people, you know. But
yeah.
I said, well, they just have to eat, or I can fit something in the middle of the week to see them. But I really, if we aren't a better charge for having and better Christians, I just can't understand, you know, because this is living everyday religion, and we know that our ministers, and I can't blame them for not studying for the ministry.
Yeah.
The material returns and the lack of appreciation on the people, the people, and the indifference of some. But our mission was just like a revival meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. There was one family that in our community, because they're not members of the church, but they had no connection. It didn't reach them because of family interest. And then there was another family, and maybe one member came Sunday morning. And then there are other families that, if they could just participate, even though they're Baptists or other people, but that's like a revival. He'll get up and preach to you, and the people he's preaching to aren't there.
That's right.
You see, the people who love the church, we're all can be preached to, and we all need to learn, and we all need to be inspired from time to time. But it's the fact that we don't always reach the people we would like to reach. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't always have, Rob. Let me turn this off, and I'll ask you. I'll tell you.
Have an illness to make us stop and think.
Yes.
And Dr. Kokomore said, I thought I was leading a Christian life.
Yeah.
But he said I had a leg trouble, and I don't know how many months he had to stay in bed at one time.
Yes.
But he said the Lord gave me time to do a good bit of thinking, and I wasn't doing all I could do for him. So that might have been they had to strike Paul down, wasn't it, to make him sit up and think, you know.
Well, now there you are. You've got two things. You've got a lot of thinking and a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. And then something comes to turn you upside down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that requires considerable substance in a person.
I never have been turned upside down, I guess, and I guess I need to be. But when my father died, when I was quite young, he and I were very close. And I had the idea, I never want to do anything that he can see me do and he would be disappointed, which is like our heavenly Father. But God is love. Now, David says he worships, he has a God that's a being, and Ms. Yates says she does too.
Yeah.
But that's not real to me. God is love, and love is within your heart and life.
I forget how
God is God is love. What is it? God is the Spirit, maybe. Mm-hmm.
I forget how Brother Lewis stated it, but there's something that turns you. And it's not just a little civic virtue of doing your duty. It has to be something like that. And it came back to me, one of the mothers when I was a child, and of course I knew her all my life, Mrs. Holliday, she sang. You know, she wasn't a great singer, but she had a beautiful voice, and you know how it is. She sang at all the weddings and funerals, and the tears all just came down her cheeks, whether she was happy or sad.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, you just don't do that just from some little civic responsibility.
No,
it has to be a little farther along than that.
That's like Ward Williams down at First Methodist, and he's leaving there with Dr. Ruttman when Dr. Ruttman leaves in June. And Boyd sings, but bless his heart, he can hardly get through a song without breaking down. You know, his experience, his son was killed on the tractor, his only child, only son, several years ago, and he has never been able to sing at weddings or anything like that since. And he said, well,
he sings beautifully.
Yes, and he breaks down most every Sunday. He said, I could just shoot myself. I said, well, Boyd, it's better to do that than let it build up in you. You know, that's his way of expressing and his way of, he loves to sing. And I think maybe one of the larger churches might have, I don't know whether they hurt his feelings or something, but I see his point. His daughter's married, and more likely someday there's grandchildren to start, and there'll be other obligations, other things he wants to do, but I don't know whether they pay him at McIntosh or not. I doubt if they pay him to come. I doubt if he'd have it, but that's something else when you go to church every Sunday morning like Miss Strange does and play the organ. She does it because she wants to. She's not a great player, but she works at it. She's been working at her things, you know. So you don't know, and she's a very dedicated person, or she wouldn't be alive today. But anyway, people have to do things. We have quite a discussion in Sunday school class. We enjoy it. Carl and Walter, Martha and Leroy. Walter said if he thinks anything is right for him to do, hard enough. I don't know how to express this. It's all right. Well, we take part. Well, it's kind of what you want to do. Whether you, you know, that's the thing. And I might think it's all right for me to go fishing on Sunday afternoon after I've been to Sunday school and church. But see, it's the influence that someone else had. Well, I don't ever try to hide it. When I taught Sunday school class, it sure knew I went fishing. I told them I couldn't get in the boat because the boat would sink. That would be my thinking, that boat was going to sink. I could walk out. So we all have sin, you know. That's the thing about it. But some people said they're above sin, but I don't think that person lives. Do you?
Do you think that this witnessing, as the they had a conversion?
Yes, and you'd be surprised. And they don't advocate. You're saying, well, you just got to come here at 7:30 Wednesday night and have a prayer meeting. But they said, like, well, take for instance, if Kay and Lynn and two or three others wanted to get together and discuss something, a book or something in the Bible, then that would be what they would advocate, having a sharing group like that, congenial people, mm-hmm. and then maybe inviting someone else, but have it small, not have it so large that it means. But there you run into the problem of children and people busy and things like that. But I'd be lost as far as some preachers think about prayer life, because I just don't set aside an hour, 2 hours a day to pray. I try to pray while I'm washing dishes. I try to lead a prayer line. Mm-hmm. And in Tallahassee, they asked for people to pray at 5 o'clock, and they said, well, I can't pray at 5 o'clock. I have a class, you know. That always stood out one night.
But nearly every one of the cases that you've talked about in this mission, well, all of them, they wouldn't have been able to witness had they not had a conversion.
No. And
I mean, in that kind of conversion. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I mean, other people witness without having them.
But I think you could witness without having any...
Being turned upside down.
Yeah, especially. I mean, you could work out, but you don't have that on. This is off the record. The little boy... A little lively boy. We never did see just the point, but I don't think he could bring me a container. I had given her some potato salad in, and Mark was on the back porch, so she handed him the paper sack, and he reached in because Lois always takes him somewhere she goes to see him, you know, and she didn't know it was that. And he found the carton, and he took out the carton. You can keep this. And took out the carton, looked down in the bottom of one, and then Mark's 18 months, and she's already teaching himself.
Let me give you some Gatorade.
All right, just a little bit, not much. What time are you going to game? Oh, they gave a prayer. And I must try to find that list because I wanted to send the Cokesbury and see if they had just little pamphlets about preaching life. But this Ben Johnson was one of the leaders. We were talking about Hosford and some of these other places over in West Florida. And they said they had one of the missions over there first. It started back in 61, and then the first real mission was in 64, I think. And said... They had these little songs they sang, you know, God loves you and I love you too, you know. So they would point to different people and then they'd shake hands with someone and say, God loves you and I love you too. And the old man doesn't say, yeah, but I love my wife. I don't know whether that was boss or somebody that said that. That old man's face turned just as red as that one. That's all right, but I love my wife.
Lord.
That's one of them. Now, that's why Martha, see, she was outgoing like that, you know. And,
She told that.
And always full of fun. And Mark drew her picture on the paper, on the bulletin board, Jackie yacking, you know, her teeth going like this, you know. And then she wrote something else under that.
Yeah.
I have your grapefruit. I realize God didn't eat grapefruit, I mean, but you eat them.
I sure do.
Yes, sir. Well, I tell you, I know this. I don't know what will happen to the poor churches, but these little churches, for in times past and now, they contribute something to the personality that doesn't come from anywhere else. Now,
I guess it's loyalty, don't you reckon?
No, loyalty is pretty high type thing.
I mean, no matter who we have in our little church, there are a few that are going to be there because of loyalty and...
It's a refinement, too.
And we've come up with a
church. It's a sensitiveness. It's a sensitiveness.
You didn't get your grapefruit.
That you don't find.
Oh, and not many people that don't admire the little churches, we say, and that's what some of them are getting back to, say in Gainesville, they have so many of these small churches, they want to be a part of a church, and they go out to these small churches and work.
Little missions.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
But there's one thing that the churches have never been able to do, and that's refine the mind. That has to be done somewhere else. It can be done by studying the scientists or studying insurance or things like that. But the church itself has been pretty helpless.
Well,
if they do anything, it takes it in the wrong direction of theology and metaphysics and things like that.
Who would do it? The preacher or us?
Just a regular system.
Well, the church is made up of people.
No, but I know, but the church just simply is not turned. They have to rely. Well, she knows botany and all those things, and is just a professional at it.
Yes, but she's been able to discipline herself, perhaps because of her religion, and learn these things. I mean, she stayed with them.
Yes.
You get that. Now, that's within you, see, but you have to have a desire to learn. She wouldn't have gotten them unless she had had a desire to learn.
Well, we make
up the church.
No, you've just got people there who are flat here to start with, and there's nothing in that to discipline them. But now you take people who've already got it, you see, and it shows.
Yes.
The church itself can't do it.
Well, the church is made up of people, and
I know, but you got
it takes
the church is helpless if it's got a. Now, as I say, I'm overstating it. The church is helpless if it's got a bunch of,
The church today doesn't help the ones that have any sense.
Well, now that's it.
That's why we were so interested.
Now, you kind of have to live above the church. The literature is part of the church.
Yeah. Sometimes, some of it.
Well, it's kind of like the Bible. Some people said, I believe everything in the Bible, but the Bible was written by different people.
Yeah.
And they expressed. And if you and I, the three of us, saw something happen out on that porch and we wrote down, it would be entirely different.
You
and you
recognize
it.
This is what you're talking about. It's the brain that has to distinguish that.
But I knew two learned men once. And they were...